Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Just Another Kill Team Podcast, connecting Kill Team communities across the globe. Your hosts today are me, I'm Jason.
And I'm Travis, regular co-hosts.
We connect with all sorts of different people, TOs, competitive players, and just anyone else that has something interesting to say that they message us and convince us to talk about on an episode.
Yeah, we do like making the world a little bit smaller, one hobbyist at a time.
We do have a Discord and a Patreon, which is definitely some stuff that you should check out if you enjoy our content.
And if you do enjoy this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends who play Kill Team, because the more, the merrier.
In today's episode, we chat with Jeremy Carnucci from the Plasma Spam team. Jeremy placed 8th overall at the Las Vegas Open Tournament, playing a compendium team, that being the Hive Fleet Tyranids. Here's our conversation with Jeremy.
Hello.
Okay.
How's everyone doing post-LVO?
This intro is definitely one of the better beats.
Ah, thank you.
That's all Jason.
Yep, I do a bunch of I do like DJing and music production is like my main thing. So it's a little thing I chopped together, okay. And I was like, I hope it's not like too cyberpunk.
And I like
man. Every time I listen to it in the car, my head just starts bobbing naturally. It just comes out. I like it.
Yeah, glad to hear that.
And that's all, Jason. But yeah, how's everyone doing post LVO? You know, everyone coming down off their highs.
I had my first beta Decima game. Like, I didn't think about it at all until I got back.
And yeah, honestly, how did it feel?
The new format with beta Decima. It kind of scares me as a NID player, but coming back into it, I'm not sure if I want to pick it up right away just because of the obscuring issues that are there. But it's definitely going to be a fun to jump into. So I'm looking forward to it as something new. But as a competitive side, I'm very scared.
That's what you did there with something, jumping into something new, because there's going to be a lot of jumping. Yeah. have you guys played on the beta Decima stuff at all, or not yet?
You know, me, Travis, I'm waiting for the February tournaments to start up, because I think between the monthly at my normal shop and then the Bushwick Brawl, which is at the end of the month, which we'll stream, we'll get a reasonable amount of experience on it. I think on the stream, we'll cycle through 4 different maps, because at least for whatever we'll say about this terrain, it does look much easier to set up than, you know, open or on In the Dark, because the boards are preset, and then compared to In the Dark, it's just a lot less fiddly. So maybe it'll be nice if GW gets a couple sets at the GW Opens, then people will really get a chance to try it. But personally, I think in the New York scene, we'll have enough sets where we can try probably like 9 tables at the first tournament, hopefully. And that way, we'll, at least in New York, I'll have a strong opinion. I just have no opinion at the moment. And not until I try it.
Yeah, having not played on it yet, I'm not sure what to expect. But the modularity of it does seem like a cool selling point as far as setup, takedown, and making it very easy to just get rolling with it.
And I think, like, visually, it does do a good job of creating, like, a nice visual playing field, because it's got 3 layers and you have models kind of layered throughout. So, like, just looking at it, I think it does look nice, especially because a lot of people like In the Dark because it's got the door opening and it's very top down. This one is, like, top down, but it's got, like, a parallax effect going. So I think visually it looks kind of cool. I do think that you probably need to play with objective markers that actually are terrain, because otherwise the terrain looks... That actually looks like just unplayable. It looks like In the Dark with more shooting lanes, which is rough.
Yeah. Yeah, the one time I played it was with the objective markers that are actually cover. So it was like you can hide behind the objective markers, stuff like that. And I brought 8 Howling Banshees against my friend Lee, who was playing Intercession. And he brought an aspect. So, like, he did a build that was very similar to my Doom Guy LVO build. And my big priority was just to hide it until I can strike. And that actually worked out pretty well. It's a really close game. I think I made like a giant mistake and it made me lose, but just playing 8 Banshees and trying to hide the whole time worked way better than I was expecting. It definitely does like require those objective markers that are light terrain as well, but like, it's a really fun game, and I'm looking forward to playing it more, and my first impression is positive.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing it. I'll probably be playing in the first monthly. We'll be putting Adrian Bonavento, the ITC's number one, on TO duty, so let him cool off a little bit after his big run at LVO. Which, you know, might be a good time for us to swing into it, because the reason why we're doing today's podcast with Jeremy is because of some crazy LVO results. And because a lot of our fans really, really enjoy Compendium.
Yes. Yes. So Jeremy,
we are here. We exist.
Yes. You got 8th overall, and you were playing the Compendium Tyranids, the Hive Fleet. I mean, this was like, I've seen other people do it. I've seen people do like the Alpha Strike where you do the dash, you do the lurk move, you dash again, and you shoot a heavy weapon. I've seen that before, but this was just like good old fashioned big bugs in melee. I mean, for me, was I the only game you brought the big bugs out for, or are they like good in other matchups?
No, so right before yours, for game 8 and game 9, I fought against Intercession, and I only break out the big bugs, the warriors, against elite because they can munch anything they want to in one go, but you almost leave yourself exposed after that. So against something like commandos or a 10 activation team, I don't want to leave my guy just out in the open waiting to die. But against an elite team, I can hold back for that last activation, and then I can just run wild and you can't stop it. So your game and the one prior, I brought the warriors, and don't worry, the same result happened in the first intercession matchup too. So it wasn't just your guys that got munched.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was a cool build. So for anyone that is curious, the warrior build in this case for absolutely annihilating elites is the bone swords plus bone sword and lash whip, and they end up with 5 attacks, and then if you fight them in melee, you get -1 attack, and they have 18 wounds, they have a 4-up save, it's power swords. And then you also gave them all 3 of them had the +1 inch of movement, which is like adrenal glands, and then the toxin sacks, which means if you score a single crit, then you upgrade a fail into a normal. So that's basically just like 2 crits and 3 hits against everyone, and then they just show up and bring like 2 or 3 hits to the table, and you just mulch them in one go.
Yes, it's definitely a power swing, which is why it's only truly valuable, in my opinion, into a team like Elites, Phobos, Intercession, Legionaries, and it catches people so off guard, because for the longest time, people have been saying, don't give up on warrior shooting. You got to hold something in reserve for some long-range threat. I just said, no, we're here to get in your face. We're here to go fast. And it's a one-trick pony, but it worked. It worked to some degree.
If the one trick is good enough and you have enough activations where you can actually, you know, abuse your opponent, then it doesn't really matter if you're a one trick or not. As long as the one trick is I send a warrior in and you lose a model and you go last twice, that means that if you get 2 Marines without them doing anything, the game is very, very hard to recover with only 4 guys. Because it's not like the Gene Stealers are scrubs in combat either. Like 2 Gene Stealers will also take down pretty much anything.
Or like even 1. I mean, I feel like I had 2 Intercessors die to just 1 Gene Stealer. And those like assault intercessors too. Yes. Like those guys are also mean. The free dash and the super conceal makes them like the perfect mission piece. They're just like zip around and you can't like you snipe them from a vantage. Not that you could at LVO anyway.
Get 5 on a fire team.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you end up taking a leader but warrior, or did you take a leader gene stealer most of the time?
So when I brought the warriors, I took a leader warrior. So the roster size really limits what you can take, because you're wanting 10 gene stealers for your general take all comers list. You've got 3 warriors that are minimum to be taken, and one of them has to be a leader. And then you have 7 gaunts. So if I take the warriors, one of them has to be a leader. I cannot take a gene stealer leader with a warrior just because of roster space. But the leader warrior that hits on 2s, I don't give him a toxin sack usually because he's hitting on 2s. If he misses 1 die and I need that hit, I can reroll that for a CP. I'm not worried about it. But a gene stealer leader that hits on 2s, I'm rerolling anyway with Relentless. I don't see a benefit there.
Yeah, and the 10-wound breakpoint doesn't matter as much just because when you get shot with them on a 5-up save, you're not generally making it through. So,
right. Right. If I get shot, they're just dead. It's hard to cover that.
Yeah, there's only so many angles you can cover. But it sounds like the 10 Gene Stealers did a lot of work at LVO. 7-2, definitely nothing to scoff at. What were your two losses, and kind of what do you think went right in this tournament compared to other tournaments? Because I think when we were doing some of the pre-show notes, you mentioned that you tried this at Nova. Obviously, it didn't go as well because this is your best tournament result with them. What do you think was different, and how do you think you either change or improve? Because, you know, I'm just kind of curious to hear.
Yeah. So my two losses were to Mike Cortez's Commandos. I just can't compete with a 11 activation 10 wound team. I am relying on a crit and a hit getting through with my Gene Stealers with a strat ploy for feed for an extra damage. And that's if he does not just a scratch it. So Commanders are such an uphill battle for me. Same with Vetguard, Felgor, any of your bespoke melee teams. They just do melee better than me. I just hide better from shooting. So I survive longer, but in melee against a true melee team, it's hard for me to compete. I'd say what went better here versus Nova was I took 10 Gene Stealers on my roster versus 5 at Nova. Because Nova, I was prioritizing the Gaunts because you can take 8 of them on a roster, and I really like Gaunts. They give you access to recon and security. They get the GA2 for claiming objectives and just double tapping an enemy. But the Gene Stealers, I think, are the core team, and you just tech into the Warriors or the Gaunts when you need to. So having the 10 Gene Stealers to be able to cover the Harlequins, to cover the Eldar and the Corsairs, to cover the Novitiate matchups, it's so crucial as compared to having 5 Gene Stealers and 8 Gaunts, especially on an open board where those Gaunts are not safe like a Gene Stealer is. So it's a lot more forgiving and a lot more of an aggressive play style that you can take.
Yeah, you're when you're doing the 10 wide, you're just a stronger 10 wide than some of the shooty-centric 10 wides, just because each one of your dudes can't get shot unless they get within 2. Obviously, against Kasserkin, Novitiates, they might be able to get in and blow up a Gene Stealer, but then you can reverse. So depending on how the initiatives go, you can break some of the lines, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, so you said the first one was against Commandos, and the second loss?
So I guess second loss was against Commandos technically, but first loss was against John Reese and his Star Striders on Into the Dark. That was just a matter of, I think it came down to a dice roll for initiative turning point 3, and it did not go in my favor. And with them being able to take recon, I just could not stop recover item. So he got ahead on points fast and was able to just maintain that lead of 1 or 2 points the whole game. 1 or 2 different dice rolls, things could have been different, but it was a great play game. And it came down to the wire, which I can't fault. I mean, that's a sign of a great game. So
yeah,
it was just a matter of anything that his big laser shoots at dies. That's just hard.
Yeah. Yeah. So in general, like the Star Striders, you feel like is a pretty approachable matchup.
It is. Because I can kill any of their models in 2 hits, with the exception of maybe the Assassin, it's very doable for me to trade 1 for 1. I would rather have taken on Into the Dark. I love the 8 Gaunts and giving 5 of them Acid Maws to have lethal 5 splash shooting on Into the Dark and just being able to double tap 2 points at once. Unfortunately, I don't have roster space for that, so I had to go 10 Gene Stealers. And I can trade 1 for 1 very effectively, but when you're scoring points and forcing me to cover more of the board than maybe I would like to, especially because of how the doors work with Into the Dark, Gene Stealers, yes, they can open a door and they can dash or charge, but they usually can't open a door, charge, fight. And it's very difficult to be able to have that utility. So he played it very cagey. He kept just far enough away from me where I had to run up to him and just expose myself to being obliterated on the back end. And then going against a 10 or an 11 activation.
It's 11 team, activation, yeah.
Yeah, 11 activations. It's just hard. It's definitely an activation.
Especially when the 11th activation is a laser beam that just deletes a Gene Stealer. Like, sure, you've got your 5 of invuln, but when each shot can injure you, that just means that like the next turn, even if you survive it, your Gene Stealer is not guaranteed. Like, yeah, you get 5 dice on 4s, but 5 dice on 4s relentless, not necessarily going to guarantee that you survive. And if they hit you with a 7 damage shot, they can still just normal melee you out. So it's just not a great thing when the 10th shot is, you know, you laser beam, you die, or you go, you charge, you fight, that person dies, and suddenly you've opened yourself up to another activation on the opposite side that like drops a cannon barrage on you. So it's just, if they get one attack that breaks parity, then you're just behind for the rest of the game, and they're never going to give it back to you because they have a freestanding laser beam that's just going to hit you whenever.
Right, and the fact that it's a 2-inch blast and a 3-inch blast, I definitely had to play smart about where I positioned, and I want to say I did not give him any blast double targets, which was a point of pride for me, especially with a 3-inch blast. That is just deadly against a Gene Stealer. So I didn't give him any great targets. He was usually able to take out one guy at a time, which is what I wanted, but it still is just too hard to recover from.
To be fair, that's all he wants too. Like, if he can have no one, like, if he can just take out one Gene Stealer at a time with a laser beam over four turns, like, that's fine. Like, you'll win that game.
Yeah, one
probably.
Per turn.
Yeah, because the leader and then the assassin can both clean up anyone that gets hit by a gun. Because six damage crits is more than enough to take a chip damage Gene Stealer out of the running.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, both of the teams that beat you were 11 activations. Did you play against any other teams that out-activated you?
I don't believe so. I think the only other one that came close was Novitiates with 10. And I definitely used that to my advantage by taking the Gene Stealers because I have the Gaunts on my roster, and I love the Gaunts. They are just so much fun to run, but they leave you with 9 activations. So against your Corsairs, against your Hand of the Archon, you're even. But that 10th activation, especially when each model can two-shot one of the heirs, it's so viable. So luckily, I faced Kazurkin as well with 10 activations, but I believe that was it. So no Vet Guard, no Cults, no Pathfinders, thankfully. Just 2 11 activation teams, and that was my extent of my downfall.
Yeah.
I mean, it's rough out here for the 10-man teams to beat the 11 activation teams right now, with no medic, I think. When you go to the 10 activation teams, you're looking for a way to break the activation parity, and right now medics are probably the easiest way, just because it's the only way that you can actually, like, save a model. And then Frenzied Felgores just break activation parity by default, because that is their entire shtick.
That's what they do.
Yeah, which is not a thing that the Gene Stealers are ever going to be able to touch.
No, I have never beaten the Felgore, nor do I think I ever will. It's just too much to kill them in melee and then have them charge you right back.
I mean, it's just like, and like that terrain that we had at LVO was like impossible. Like, if someone didn't want to give you a shot, they 100% could just like not give you a shot. Like, it was really easy to hide there. And I think that was like just super strong for Felgar. Like, it was good for the team that you played as well. But like, you had super conceal on the Gene Stealer, so it was less important. Felgar. So you didn't end up playing Felgor then at LVO?
No, I did not.
But you do practice with Felgor locally, right? Because Orion, you know, third place, was on the road to being first place before Vivek, the Vet Guard player, took him down at LVO. He's one of your normal practice partners.
Yes, and I am very grateful that he is local to my area, because while I quite often end up being the punching bag for his practice reps, you do learn a lot of what to do and how to play into it. And against a non-top level Felgor, especially when Into the Dark, I think I have a chance. But against anybody who knows what they're doing, it's just such a stronger team. But getting those reps in against them was great because I knew what to do going into it. I had a game plan. I'm not going to say that game plan was good, but it was a plan. So it definitely helps having someone of that caliber taking one of the better teams that you can throw yourself at a wall against every week and just see, okay, does this stick? No. Does that stick? No. Keep trying things until something ends up working.
Yeah. I'd love to dive a little bit more into your like background, how long you've been playing, like who you've been playing with, and just like any kind of like plasma spam shout outs that you want to include in there as well.
Yeah. So I started when the edition kicked off. I actually split the starter set with somebody, and I got the Vet Guard half, but Vet Guard never really interested me, so I held on to him for about 3 to 4 months. Local tournament kicked off. I actually took High Fleet to the event. It was only a 3-round tournament, I believe. Took 3 Warriors, 5 Gene Stealers the whole way. I think I won one game against Compendium Necrons, but this was, again, when no one really knew what they were doing at the time, and Custodes were 4 APL, because that was fair. But I held off for a little while. The tournament scene and the local scene in my area didn't really have much going on. Moved to the Towson area back in late 2021, started going to Titan Games and Hobbies with the Plasma Spam crew and slowly got them to start coming out of their shells again, start coming back. Lockdown had kind of sent everybody home, but really started to pick up again fall of 2022, where we were playing regularly on the weeks. And then going into KTO 2023, I had been practicing regularly at that time. But no, the Plasma Spam members up there have been great. Even just the local guys that aren't members of the team. We've got an intercession player that shows up every week. We've got a guy who was running Kroot and then handed the Archon for a while, and he's been great to play against. So we do have some locals that show up pretty regularly, and being able to get those consistent games and consistent reps, I don't think I've missed a game night once a week, except for maybe 1 or 2 weeks for vacation. So it's definitely been a big help.
Yeah, I know Plasma Spam is definitely one of the larger teams on the probably the U.S. stage at this point. I think you guys pretty actively recruit players into the team compared to some of the other regions. I think Bats on the West Coast would be similar, where they have a pretty large team. They're growing at Kel team, you know, at this year's LVO. They managed to pull in John, can you roll a crit, from the UK to join the team. So it's a little bit of like team rivalry stuff. I figure that Plasma Spam, because, you know, you guys are regionally pretty tight, you guys must have some things that you guys do to kind of train up some of the newer players. Because at one point, you were the new guy on Plasma Spam, if I remember the lore correctly. Because I've been playing since 2021, and I've bumped into Plasma Spam over time because you guys are very close to us regionally. And I remember they were like, ah, Jeremy, he's one of the new guys. He's getting pretty good. And then this year, you know, a full year later, probably, you did very, very well. So is there anything that you guys do specifically that you think really helps encourage player growth?
I don't think that we do anything specifically. We like to run an event every year around Christmas time that really helps to gain new people to the community. But I think the big thing is just we realize that our skilled players don't always have to play against skilled players to still get benefit from it. But it also helps to get the new players and the guys who are maybe not the top tier competitors to get them up to speed. Because if you have someone like Ryan Wilfong, who's playing me twice a month when I first started, I didn't win a single game. It wasn't even close. But you learn, you get better, you see what works, you get criticism each time. But we're all just very supportive of anyone who wants to play a game. It's not, hey, I'm a top-ranked player, I'm only going to play against someone else who's good in this area to try and make sure I can keep my skill level high. It's, no, man, you're brand new, I'll run you through a demo game. That's fine. I can do that this week. I don't need to have a serious game. So it's just making sure that everyone is available for any sort of matchup that comes up, and we don't try and hold off for the true skill test of gotta practice with the best of the best. It's more so just roll dice, have fun, learn as you go, and good luck to you if you face Ryan.
Yeah, I think, you know, at the Goonhammer Open last year, I think we had one of the Votan players come by. Ryan? I want to say it was Ryan. Maybe it's not Ryan. Anyways, he was like, oh, I just playing against Ryan playing Votan. I'm just being destroyed. And he came to Goonhammer. He's like, I'm going to play Intercession. I can't take it anymore.
Yep.
So there's probably a nice balance of like, you probably want to pick a team that's good enough where as you get better, you get to like, ah, there's a chance. Votan, maybe not the best starting spot for that kind of play. As much as people love
them. Hey, man, they've had some good showings.
They have had better showings.
Sneaks out a way to win.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a couple people destroy me with Votan. More often than not, I mean, like, I had some easy games, and then all of a sudden I had a couple that were just, like, pretty brutal. So, I mean, I've seen it all over the place, and I'm like, I'm not ready to discount my expectations for Votan yet.
Yeah, I played a game against them maybe 2 months ago and won the game, but I had the worst showing I'd ever had with my Gene Stealers. I took 10 Gene Stealers. His laser beam shot took out 4 in one go, and I just had to shake my head at that. Didn't know what happened, but it took out 4 of them. And then the turn before, his grenade launcher took out 3 of them in one go. So in 2 shots, he took out 7 of my guys. I was down to 3. I won the game, but those are moments that you will never forget.
Whoa. That's the humble brag. I lost 7 dudes, but I still won.
Yeah, I had like the flip flop of that where that my all time record for the Doom guy's kills was he killed 7 dwarves, but I still lost that game. Ooh. That was a gnarly one. Yeah, like I mean, basically like everyone died, and then I like double tapped and overwatched on round 3 and 4, and yeah, Doom guy strong.
Yeah, that Doom Bolter, that scared me at LVO for sure. It did some work.
Yeah. I mean, like, I was like, if I do lose this one, the one goal that I still want to squeak out is Doom Guy kills all 3 big bugs. And he did. So I was like, at least I can put a check in that box.
Yes, and you had no problem doing that either.
Yeah.
Yeah, for anyone who hasn't heard, or, you know, there will be a vlog out on our YouTube channel, which we have just started, with Can You Roll a Crit and me, Jason, and Adrian, where we talk a little bit about our run from all of LVO. But Jason's main strategy this weekend at LVO, or last weekend, was taking the Doom guy and just dooming it up all the way across all 9 rounds of play.
Yeah.
With actually just a really good record. So Jason, if you want to talk a little bit about your record for a second.
Yeah. So I won 5, tied 2, and lost 2. The 2 that I lost, one of them was against Jeremy here with those super mean Tyranid monsters that we were just talking about. I also lost against Felgor, and that was Jimmy Kelly. It was basically just like, I made a choice that I was going to throw a frag into his aggressive units, and then when I actually went to do it, I threw it into, like, the back, like, support structure, and I was like, oh, why did I do that? And, but in general, I think it was a real uphill battle. Like, that was my big mistake, because then I think if his people ran out and tried to fight me, then you can chainsword them out and just run along. But I think in general, that is just a really tough matchup for Intercession. So listeners, if you've got a good plan for Intercession into beating Felgor, you should hop on our Discord and, let us know, cause I'm sure we've got a lot of wisdom out there amongst the listeners and we want to hear from you. And then I also had 2 ties. One of them was a Intercession mirror match. And it was just like we both pushed really far forward into the middle to like contest objective markers. I got initiative, and then just a goon with a chainsword killed his leader at like the first activation, like the first violence of the game, and that was Headhunter, which was pretty gnarly. And then it's just like chainswords running into bolt rifle guys is just I mulched him in melee, and then a rifle would kill me back. Or I'd like get people low on health, and Doom Guy killed 3 enemy intercessors, and I squeaked it up for a tie at the very end. And then my other tie was against Vivek and his vet guard, and that was just like we both popped the door and like rushed the middle super aggressively, and we had just a crazy shootout. It was absolutely bonkers. I mulched like enough people that his demo guy had to like go to central control because he's just like would have given up points to just pointlessly kill intercessors or like run for central control and like definitely get those points. So ultimately, I mean, like that game was totally bonkers. I think Doom Guy only killed like 4 or 5 vet guard models, which is like pretty low for him. He's, I don't know, it was into the dark. He can't be everywhere. But yeah, that was a crazy game. Like we had a lot of fun. I mean, like it was a perfect balance of, we made a lot of jokes, we respected each other, and we like had a lot of like serious questions and serious analysis. But it was a really fun game. Ultimately I did dodge Kasserkin, but I'm also 100% sure that Jeremy's Hive Fleet was a billion times worse than like any Kasserkin could do to intercessors. Like, I most of my practice games were against Kasserkin, and like it's tough, but it's nowhere near as tough against the Tyranid warriors there.
Yeah, with 18 wounds, it's hard to chip them down. But the Doom Bolter worked very well. So you had one strategy. Unfortunately, it was after someone else had died.
Yeah, which is also part of the strategy.
Yeah, I will happily trade 1 for 1 and just give you what you want, and then from there just board control. But with 6 bodies, board control is just hard.
Yeah, and if I trade 1 for 1, which was like my plan going into it also, and then I've got 3 intercessors versus 5 gene stealers, and then the gene stealers can each just, I think the next 2 kills was just a gene stealer killed an intercessor and like didn't he, like took 1 hit back and like wasn't even injured. It was just like, okay, yeah. The gunner just runs away. Yeah. And the game ends.
Yeah, to be fair, your leader did not roll what he needed to roll to survive that. And I think I rolled something like 3 crits and 2 hits,
yeah,
which will mulch pretty much anything.
Yeah, with like the rending and stuff. So it was like a pretty like reasonable roll. And then like my roll was like a little below average. It was like 2 out of 4 hits, which like isn't really that crazy. And you kind of just like plan for that to happen. But yeah, I mean,
if only you could have had a Doom guy with a tilting shield also.
I know, I should have traded the aspects for the tilting shield in that game.
It might have made a difference, it sounds like. Those 3 crits from the Gene Stealer. It definitely could have blocked them.
Yeah, a duelist power weapon sergeant with a tilting shield is pretty gnarly. He's not nearly as cool as the bolt gun, the Doom Bolter guy, but Doom Bolter with a tilting shield. Maybe I'll keep an eye out for that situation next time I play Intercession.
Yeah, the tilting shields are gnarly because they shut down the lethal 5 and the toxin sacks on the warriors, as well as the rending on the gene sealers. So that right there affects every single model of mine, and it makes it so much more of an uphill battle to go into.
Yeah, yeah. I think if I did do tilting shields, it would be only one, just because no one else can really like reliably do as much like burst damage at once, like. All of the, like, you can have all the intercessors, like, 3 intercessors with scopes shoot at one warrior and kill it, or you can just have Doom Bolter just do it in one activation. So I think the Doom Bolter is, like, super totally worth it. But yeah, I think one tilting shield would have made a big difference in that game.
You know, I'm actually kind of curious. We could do a little bit of a operative showdown.
Operative showdown!
You know, to get into the nitty-gritty on the harder choice, because it sounds like elites are easy for you, because you bring in your 3 Tyranid warriors, and every single one of them deletes pretty much any of the elite operatives from any of the SKUs in one-on-one combat, because Weapon Beast means that you're -1 attack on your opponent, which means you're 5 attacks against 3s, which means that there's nothing in melee that's going to touch an 18-wound warrior. With power swords, basically, right?
Right.
So this is really down to the part of your roster that you struggled on, which was the Gene Stealers versus the Gaunts. I don't even know what kind of Gaunts you took, because I wasn't really looking into your roster. So you want to talk us through kind of the workflow when you go to select a team. When are you picking Gaunts versus Gene Stealers, and what kind of Gaunts do you have on your roster? Because you only have 20 people, or 20 operatives on the roster, and it, space is tight.
Yeah, so the 20-man roster slot is very tight with the compendium team. Technically, you can take 8 Gaunts or 8 Termagaunts, but if you take a Termagaunt with the Devourer, it counts as 2 Gaunt selections. So when you have 10 Gene Stealers, 3 Warriors, you only have 7 slots left. It means you have to take a Devourer Gaunt to make those numbers work. And is it a fair trade? Maybe not, but I will say, as far as Gene Stealer versus Gaunts go, I'm preferential to the Gaunts all day. They give you recon, they give you security, you can GA to them, you put them with acid mauls, and if you have 2 Gaunts that both have 4 shots, hitting on 2s, 3/3, splash 1, lethal 5 into the dark versus anything that isn't necessarily a custode or a top-notch intercessor, you can reliably take down those targets. So 1-on-1, 1 Gaunt versus 1 Gene Stealer, Gene Stealer all day. But when you get the 2 per Gene Stealer, roughly, I think the Gaunts eke it out, because you can just throw bodies to the wood chipper, just like Vet Guard do. You have those disposable things you can just forget about and not worry about them. As far as when you take them versus each, I found that anything with 8 wounds, your Harlequins, your Eldar, Gene Stealers are the way to go, because you can reliably get those 4 damage off with 2 hits, 3 if they parry. But with the Gaunts, I actually like the Gaunts into Legionaries a lot, because they're 3/5 damage, and if they're Nurgle Legionary specifically, because the Gene Stealer becomes 3/5 damage, Relentless and Rending, not bad, but a Gaunt is 3/5 already with Relentless as well. So if you get 1 crit through, especially if you're spending 1 CP for feed to make that a 6 damage crit, you charge with 1 Gaunt, you deal 6 damage, they kill you. You charge with the other Gaunt, deal 6 damage, they're dead. And trading 1.5 Gaunts for a Legionary is by all means an uptrade in every book. So I really like the Gaunts into Legionary specifically, and otherwise just mainly Commandos or Vet Guard into the dark, because it gave me those bodies for the Wood Chipper.
So then, like, against Legionary specifically, would you bring the 7 Gaunts and the 3 Warriors? Is that the build?
So that's what I would do. And it's a little interesting because I actually took Seek and Destroy every game at LVO, which I was not expecting. But against things like Intercession and Legionary, if you take the Gaunts or the Warriors, they both give you access to security as well. And you can take things like Central Control, hold the center line, hold them back, because you can out-activate them. You can put more guys on lines, more guys in areas, and you can let them come to you, at which point your Warriors just take over from back lines and eat anything that dares get close. Your Gaunts can go recover item if you need to. Your Gaunts can be your couriers. And they're not going to run down a Gaunt with a plasma guy just to stop one courier point. So they're going to let them go. And next thing you know, you're scoring points. So into Legionary specifically, that is one of the few matchups where I will take Gaunts and Warriors. Otherwise, usually there's a Gene Sealer fire team in there somewhere.
So then is there, I'm assuming some of the stuff is a factor, like you kind of chatted a little bit about it with like Into the Dark is a factor about whether you're like excited to take Gaunts. I'm assuming like loot. Is it kind of more like mission and map dependent than the enemy faction? Like, is that like as big of a factor or like close, or is it really just like pretty hard, you know, like matchup dependent? Like, you're never like, even though it's like loot under the dark, since you're playing against like Harlequins, you're just going to go pure Gene Stealers. I guess how much of an influence is the mission compared to the enemy faction when it comes to choosing Gaunts or not?
So the mission really comes down to, is it loot or not? Because you want that early initiative. You can GA two guys. If they leave a back objective open, let's say for Kazarkin to do their protect vital objective, and you get initiative, you can stalk one Gene Stealer up there. Next thing you, or sorry, you can stalk a Gaunt up, loot their back point, loot a middle point, and now they have maybe one they can score easily, maybe two if they push. So it can give you the upper edge on loot specifically. Against capture and secure, I tend to stay away from them on those missions simply because you either need an extra APL to do things, or the Gene Stealers are going to be able to run and dash and then shoot as well and get into the back lines very effectively. So loot definitely skews towards Gaunts, but for capture and secure, I haven't theory crafted or tested it out too much, but my basic default is Gene Stealers.
Yeah. At LVO specifically, were there times that you brought the Gaunts, or did they not make the cut at LVO?
So everything on my roster came out to play at least once. I did take the Gaunts into Commandos, and again, we were playing Into the Dark. I gave five of them Acid Maws. So with the five Acid Maws, with the one Gaunt with the Devourer, that's six shooting attacks. So in theory, you can take them out with a little bit of range if you can't crump them in melee. Unfortunately, my Acid Maws did not do a whole lot of work against Mike's Commandos. But specifically, they only came out once, and the Warriors came out twice. Otherwise, six out of the nine games were just straight Gene Stealers.
Yeah, a reminder for the listeners, the Acid Maws that we keep referring to is an equipment that costs two equipment points, four dice on twos, 3/3 splash one, which is basically just a bolt pistol that hits on twos. And on In the Dark, because it's splash one, it's effectively lethal five, which means that your Gene Stealers and your Hormigons can all chip up very nicely. Maybe not against 10 wound operatives, just because they can take, you know, a stray 3 or 4 damage shot just to scratch it, or just have a laser beam backed up. You're like, ah, I've come and shot you. Like, I've lived. Now die. Laser beam hits you from the sky. So maybe not as great in those situations, yeah. Right?
And then like the splash gets around the like intercessor crit damage reduction. And then there's actually like a lot of math that splash or like mortal wounds one kind of like becomes more favorable on. So that's just kind of like a fun thing to keep in mind for anybody's team that has access to that. Like intercessors could have that like accurate or whatever it is, but that makes you 3/3 mortal wounds one. So like I've thought about taking that against cults, which never came up, just because like with the damage reduction minimum 3, then you just like hammer them with that, and then your mortal wound one goes through anyways, and it pretty much just like counters that damage reduction, which is like actually pretty meaningful.
Yeah, it does mess with the math, but the other thing that I've also found is if you don't take any Acid Maws, let's say you just go straight 1-inch movement on five guys, they're not worried of your shooting. So they're not taking their barricades. They're not worried about where they're going to end up. But if you take just five Asimals, even against a team like Novitiates that I did play, I took five Asimals, it keeps them honest. It forces them to say, okay, I can run out in the open, but I'm going to get shot by something potentially. So it helps to keep your opponent at bay, especially if you then decide to take Infiltrate as your archetype, because then you got Seize Defenses, which you need barricades to do. Only one opponent at LVO actually took the barricades and put them all the way back on the end because they didn't want them or need them, probably planning for Infiltrate. So having those Asimals forces your opponents to give you another chance to score if you take the Infiltrate archetype.
Yeah.
Yeah, that actually holds into like a big key point when you're playing against all melee teams, which is you can generally start everybody on engage, but if you're taking these Asimals, it means that your opponent now has to respect that, because now they're risking taking reasonably consistent chip damage at best, or like at worst you die on a 7-wound 5-up save model. But generally 5-up save model, if you're in cover, you're not generally going to die, even with, you know, like three or four hits, like you can generally save out and you'd be okay. However, when you don't have shooting, your opponent's just like, I'm just gonna start everyone on gauge, and if you make any mistakes, now I'm just gonna tag your Genesir from like the opposite side of the map, which is what I'm pretty sure Jason here was hoping for. He's like, you're obscured somewhere, I'm just gonna reach out and touch you.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I actually like had like half. I mean, I wasn't like counting or paying attention to it, but I think I might have done like at least 5 of my 9 games on all engage. And I was like, if people are bringing shooting, I was like, whatever. But and like, if an enemy only puts one model on engage and I have 6 intercessors, and I'm just like, the first thing I do is just try to like park on your objective with a assault intercessor that's on engage, you're like, whoa, hold on. Okay. And then like just like that level of aggression can kind of catch people off guard, which actually does kind of tie in a little bit with the finding the line segment today, which is we debuted it last week, and that is just like jumping into a actual like specific situation and then like kind of navigating it from like an analysis standpoint. So I've got a couple of examples from our game. I mean, this was probably like a pretty easy one for you, but I looked at it and I was like, oh man, you're gonna eat me alive, but Doomguy's gonna hit him hard. So I just went all engage. My number one priority was try to like shut you out of your own objectives and like get a 4-2, and then if I can like keep it even for the rest of the game and do okay on my TAC ops, I was gonna win that one. And that's what I was thinking. So I just like, I pushed way out there. So when you saw that, did you pretty much just like run your script, or did you have to adapt and make other choices based around that?
So I will say, for that game and for that move specifically, I wasn't expecting it, but it did feed right into what I wanted to do anyway, because had you not taken that middle point, I would have tried to put a Gene Stealer to cap that loot point. But if I had to use a warrior, chances are at the beginning of the next turn would have been a stalk to run him the heck out of there and not get shot because he was only behind a barricade. So you putting that assault intercessor right there in the center allowed me to have a very easy, like, yep, this guy's probably just gonna eat it and take it out. So I was not expecting it, I'll give you that. It definitely caught me off guard, but it fed right into what I wanted to do, unfortunately.
Yeah. And like in general, hold on, there was a okay, so when it comes to the different like tools that you have in mind, there was some like clever stuff that I didn't see coming, and like it's clear that you're very well practiced, and like what's the name of the one that lets you change orders? You've got a ploy.
Unseen Hunter.
Yeah, so at the start or end of any activation you can change a ploy. So it's kind of like a second infiltrate option. The High Fleet doesn't have a lot of tools, but the tools they do have are very, very good. So part two of this situation is like, what tools do you have to solve that? In this instance, like, I mean, kind of what I'm looking at was, you had everyone on conceal and you had already done your infiltrate change order, so I felt extra safe to move up there, and then you still had Unseen Hunter to change orders on another one and do another charge. So I mean, that's like specific to that. And you did also mention using Lurk to reposition, just like dive into that a little bit more and just like explain the situation for the listeners and kind of like just kind of like paint that picture?
Yeah, so it's really, I like to think of it as a 2CP, 2-strat, or 2-ploy combo, where, yes, I can Unseen Hunter, and I can go from conceal to engage to take out that Assault Intercessor that is now 8 inches from my deployment zone and is ready to be eaten, knowing that if I hold off to the last activation, you won't get Overwatch, which will save me for at least one Overwatch potential shot. But then at the end of his activation, if I haven't switched his order with Unseen Hunter and maybe I use the infiltrate option, then I can swap him to conceal, knowing that turning point two, should you get initiative and I'm out in the open, I can use stalk to make a normal move and just run away behind cover, which I did do later in the game when I think I brought my leader from the side to take out another intercessor that was in the center. And I baited your leader out to come fight me, knowing that if I won initiative, I was just going to run a little farther away or hide, forcing you to come towards me, which might then had 3 genius sealers behind a wall ready to come out and just tag team this guy.
Yeah.
So the Unseen Hunter, a lot of people think it's mainly just for switching from conceal to engage for that alpha strike turn one, because you can only stalk with that strat ploy move if your guy is concealed. So you need infiltration or you need Unseen Hunter in your back pocket to be able to make that charge or make that long range blast attack with the Barb Strangler, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it also works very effectively at shutting down Overwatch if you then go from engage to conceal, so long as you have not shot yet with that operative this turn. I did that into Kazrakan. I did that into Harlequins. I did that into Hand of the Archon to negate his blaster shooter. So it's very useful to say, you know what, I don't like this odds, or I didn't win initiative, I'm going to run away knowing I can get behind a heavy cover and hide, and you cannot do anything about it. So it's very much a keep it in your back pocket, save it for that flip, and it can either kill an operative or it can save an operative. Just depends on how you want to use it.
Yeah.
Do you have any other spots in LVO where you looked at the toolbox of your team and you basically, outside of, you know, obviously selecting operatives, it sounds like there's lots of tools here that maybe people haven't looked at. I've always said that Tyranids have like one set of tricks, and once you know them, you kind of know them. You know, between the Gene Stealers, always concealed and free dash, you know, they move very quickly, set up charges, or they can stay concealed and grab points. But they have a 5-up save, so you can shoot at them. And then, you know, obviously the stock Unseen Hunter, charge someone on turn one, stuff that only they can still do. You know, once those two lines are kind of settled, you get a lot less surprises. But how did you use your tools to look at a situation at LVO, select either a Gene Stealer or a TAC op or a strat ploy or an equipment, and then execute? And how did those plays come out?
Yeah, so it was game 7. It was the first game of day 3, and I played against Harlequins, and this was my second matchup in Harlequins. And just stupid positioning on my part, I left one of my guys just not fully tucked behind cover, and his Death Jester just came right around a corner from across the map and just sniped him out of nowhere. And I was thinking, well, it was 10-on-8, now it's 9-on-8, and I need to reconsider this. And then I think he got an Overwatch shot, or it was the first activation of Turning Point 2, and he did the same thing to another model that I had just left right on the edge of cover, that I should have just taken the effort to push him just a little farther. So at that point, it was 2 models down to shooting that I should not have lost. And initially, my plan going into that map was I was just going to rush him. I kill you in 3 hits. If I fight you on my activation, and as long as I can parry one of your crits to stop the curtain falls, then you just can't stop me. And I was going to be very aggressive with it. But losing those 2 guys, I had to stay back and think, okay, you know what? We're playing Seek and Destroy. We still want to kill things, but maybe we want to let him come to us and we'll just hold 3 objectives. Because most of the times against lower model teams, I can try to go for 4 points on turn 2 at least, maybe turn 1. I think I only held 3 objectives the entire game and just played the keep away, make sure your charge ranges were where I wanted you. I knew I was initially planning to stalk and just run around his backside corner, take his home objective, and force him to then just deal with that as another flank. I think I only stalked to either retreat or to get back towards my own objectives. So it went from a very aggressive turn 1 initially to a, hey guys, we got to play damage control, hold 3, just don't let him outscore you with secondaries if you can. And it ended up being a 1-point game. And I will say that losing those two guys definitely swayed it, because 10-on-8 is a lot better than 8-on-8. And once that happened, I was not happy.
Yeah, because the big worry in those matchups is, because of Craig Rick's chess, if you go in and you hit a charge and you just roll a little bit under average and a player survives, now all the math is horrific, because yes, you didn't kill him. He might hit you with a crit run away, or he just falls back, shoots you, and then someone else comes over, cleans you up, and now you're 7v8. And it just needs to happen one time, because Craig Rick's chess is up for all 8 of the future fight actions. So you're really just like riding or dying on, you know, making sure that you get away, or you just play keep away. I think one of the good things on the adaptation there is, for anyone struggling to play against Void Dancers, you know their charge distance. Unless they finish their Sadeath, they have an exact charge range of 9 inches. You just take a 9-inch ruler and you measure every single position as they end their position, and you just stand outside of it. For you, yep, because you're using the Acid Maws, you're now able to play an asymmetric shooting game with your handful of Gene Stealers. And if one of those Gene Stealers moves up, 4 attacks on 2s, hits a Void Dancer, does 3 or 6 wounds, now if they charge you, you might actually kill them, because now they're at 5 wounds, or they're at 3 wounds, God forbid, or 2 wounds, which means they really can't charge you at that point. So now that adaptation of basically realizing, all right, I've lost 2 dudes to a random Death Jester, of course, so now I have to play very cagey, and then moving back and adjusting that game plan, that's really what, you know, finding the line is all about. Because you went from, you know, what is ostensibly an easy game, 10 activations where every single dude that touches in melee generally gets to win, and you've got 5 guns that can all chip away an 8-wound model, to now we're 8v8, and if he gets a couple asymmetric things off, now we're in a really, really rough time.
Right. I went into that game fully expecting to just pedal to the metal, just rush him, make him go on the back foot, take out my early charges when I can. And after losing those two guys, it became a, this isn't going to work, we've got to play a little cagier. But to be fair, the chip damage, like you said, I knew going into it, I was not going to kill a Void Dancer with one shooting attack. It was more so, let me shoot him, run away, hold an objective behind cover, and then someone else was able to come around the corner and charge him, and in one crit, just take him out.
Yeah, it's staging the damage, which is really nice. That's really the core problem with Void Dancers as far as like team structure goes, and the reason why they feel so like it's very hard for them to win these crazy huge tournaments, just because with 8 operatives you have to play perfect for the entire tournament. There's no, you don't really have any give.
Right, they do have some very good sticking potential with their, what is it, Prismatic Blur to reroll a defense die. They have Segarak's Jest to defend against melee. They have their Domino Field to protect against shooting. So they have the tools, but when you have 8 wounds and when you're facing a Gene Stealer that has likely 5 hits coming through, you can't parry that out. You're just gonna fall. So they've got their shortcomings, but they definitely have some tools to survive. And they were one of the matchups that scared me going into it. They really were, with the free fallback, with the strike with a crit and then follow up with the normal, and then with the Segarak's Jest. Segarak's Jest scared the poop out of me the entire time. Luckily, the opponents only used it maybe once or twice each game, because like you said, the math just falls apart. As soon as my first hit, like I can strike with a crit, great. They can hit me back for 5. If I'm now down to striking you for 4 to try and kill you, and you just say nope, now you're going to parry, that's a dead Gene Stealer, and that is one flank taken out. So that ploy scares me.
It's actually very similar to how commandos win most of their melee steps, because they basically get to steal initiative when you go into melee, because you go in, they just a scratch, you're like, all right, I've now lost a hit, and now you have anywhere from 2 to 3 hits, and now I'm going to take damage first, which is really rough. And actually, right, it's another reason why the new Blades of Cain, I think like the Howling Banshees, are really, really good, just because if you take 8 of them, you actually get 2 just-a-scratches effectively, because now you have 8 Banshees that can all go first, can all parry with their melee first, and then they also can do the indirect stun bolt grenades on turn 1. So they can like run around, hit you with a stun grenade, disappear, and you're like, oh man, now my guys are stunned, and now you have to deal with these Banshees that are just on your case.
Yeah, with the equipment that also counts as just a scratch, because that's even more fun. But yep, the straight Banshee list also scares me for the same exact reasons, because if it's just a fair fight in melee, no special tricks, I'm fine. But once you start throwing in those free parries, the double parries, the strike first, the just a scratch, all the math falls apart and you just cannot rely on it.
even just having having the eight banshees gives you access to three grenades is actually really good against gene sealers too, because on turn one none of your early gene sealers are particularly safe because they come up, they go do a button, you're either getting hit with, you know, six attacks on threes, 1-2 stun, or an actual just grenade, which is not great because you can't take any chip in that matchup because they have power swords. You charge right in, if they parry first or they go first and stab you, you just die, which is not great.
It's very much a, you have to know your weaknesses when you play Compendium, and especially with Tyranids. You just know there are certain matchups, it's going to be uphill the whole way, but you hope to avoid them, you do the best you can, and you look for those Intercessor matchups because the Warriors come to play, and honestly, those two Intercessor games were the most fun that I had, simply because the big bugs are so cool, and they're so unique, and you just don't see anything like it other than maybe an Ogryn or something like that, or the Chaos Torments or the Gellerpox Hulks. So it's not a very common operative type, and to see it go off and see it do what it's intended to do, that's just what I'd love to see.
Yeah, it's like, it's so lore accurate, and like the Tyranid Warriors are so cool, and like in Big Hammer they're just kind of like whatever, but like in Kill Team they just like run around, and like Intercessors are a terror in Kill Team, and then a Tyranid Warrior being scary even to an Intercessor is just like very, very cool and interesting, and like the way you played it was just like amazing. Like it was like the most like well played in like you knew ahead of time way that I've seen in a long time, and I was like, oh man, yeah. And then like Travis and I were talking about it, and I was like, oh man, I would love to chat with Jeremy on this, because that was just like, it's so like no one else is doing it. I love that. And just like the Warriors are so cool. Like one of the things that I thought about, and Travis like brought it up in our chat as well. Cause now I've fallen in love with like the Doom guy builds, Travis was like Doom Bug, like a Tyranid Warrior leader with 10 equipment points.
Oh, you absolutely can make it work. And if there's an Into the Dark match where you just say, especially if you bring back the old Tac Ops from before Crit Ops rolled out with Challenge, and you say, all right, my leader going into yours, you have this cinematic narrative game, it can be a heck of a lot of fun, and I am all here for that.
Yeah.
Just leader versus leader, duke them up, kit them out, let the dice roll.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you were going to give one, like a one sentence summary for how you should approach Compendium Gene Stealers or like Compendium High Fleet to our listeners, what would be your like one sentence summary after, you know, they've heard all the other stuff, but like how could you synthesize as much as possible in one sentence?
One sentence: lean into the melee, forget the shooting, and you're designed to go fast, you're designed to hit hard and dash away into cover, use it. Lean into your strengths and acknowledge your weaknesses, but don't try and cover them up.
I think that's good. Yeah, because I had originally theorized way, way back. I think me and Ace had a discussion. I don't know. There was like someone was like, oh, how do I play against Legionary as High Fleet? And I was like, I'm pretty sure the Warriors do more than enough to make that matchup work. And Ace was like, no, I don't think so. I was like, pretty sure that's not the case. So it's cool hearing from your point of view that, yes, a Tyranid Warrior will absolutely destroy basically anything. It's just making sure that you have the time. Though. You need to have the time to like set it up. So I think when I had originally talked about it, I was like, oh, I'll just take six Warriors and just kind of like throw them at my opponent. But, you know, the point of five Gene Stealers with three Warriors, you know, just wait it out and then watch them on any of the midline objectives and then just jump them on turn two. That's definitely a better way to do it.
Yeah, I will say the six Warriors are definitely a trap, though, because they only have two APL. And while you can spend one CP to give one of them a third APL, unless you're going into it knowing this is going to be a melee slugfest, we're here to have fun, two APL on six models, it's heavy Intercessors all over again. Only now you're melee instead of shooting. I will say the Anointed in Legionary and the Shrive Talon, if they give him the Grizzly Trophy, and especially with Nurgle, those two models will wreck my day. And I usually tend to just avoid them or feed the Gaunts into them and just let them get the crits through first. But the Anointed or the Shrive Talon will go toe-to-toe with the Warrior. And I've had it happen to me, and it's backfired on me several times. So they are fair fights. It's more so I have to stalk to get to your plasma gunner, or I stalk to get to your leader, and I just avoid the two melee guys, and I say, you know what? You're going to kill me eventually. You got to come to me, though. So legionaries can be scary. You just got to know how to work around them.
Yeah. I mean, make sure, you know, all of that makes perfect sense. You know, having enough dudes that you could throw into the wood chipper as the wood chipper is coming over to you, and then your big guys go delete their small guys. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, in our game, Jason, I was very much prepared to just take my warriors and go find your gunners first. Unfortunately, you played so aggressive with your melee guys, and I've had a backfire where I've rolled just 4 2s and a 3 in melee, and the warrior just sits there and looks dumb. But if I can have him run after the long gunners and just ignore the assault guys, I'm fine with that. Unfortunately, with how aggressive you were with it, I had to fight it, and I was relying on dice. But lethal 5, power weapons, getting an extra hit out of it, you having one less die, it definitely skews one way.
Yeah, and like that was like the opening like exchange in our game was a warrior. What did he had like one hit, two hits? It was like it was bad. Like the warrior came up and attacked. Yeah, I forgot how you fixed that. Did you re-roll it or did you just like someone else joined in later?
So the initial fight, I think I had to spend one CP to re-roll into another hit. But I think because you had a hit and a crit, and I knew you had duelers, so I knew if you got that parry off, I was not killing you. I think I had to parry your crit first, and then let you hit me or let you parry mine. And I think I was able to just get another hit through, or two hits and another crit. But I did have to spend my CP to reroll because I was worried about that fight before it happened. I may not have shown it, but I was sweating it in my head.
Yeah. Yeah, and that one panned out where, like, the next turn, that warrior killed the intercessor, charged my grenade thrower guy, which was all fine. Like, basically, yeah, I mean, it was gnarly. My whole plan was just, like, bring out the three big warriors. I was like, I can 1-1 trade there. Doom guy kills all three. That gets me champion of humanity. And then I just, like, hope that the gene stealers don't murder me. And that's where it all fell apart.
Yeah, to be fair, no one expects the gene stealers to survive much against a chainsword with 4 or 5 damage. But when you only roll one crit, and when I get 4, or when I get 3 and 2 hits, I can parry out whatever I want. And again, I just play that range game of where I use my CP to stalk, run away from you, or stalk, move closer. And if you want to get close enough to do anything to me, it's going to take your whole activation. And at that point, I've got other guys that can just take the backside or pile in and dual charge.
Yeah, it's a really good game. It was really interesting. Like, it definitely, it stood out to me of, like, of all the events I've been to, everything we've heard, it sounds like you've pretty much just been playing Compendium Tyranids all along. Like, did you dabble in other teams, like, at all, really? Or just, like, everywhere you go, every game you play, Tyranids?
Yeah, so I started kind of just all over the place. I started with Tyranids, but I only played them for maybe 2 or 3 games. And I switched up to Intercession when they came out, just to more so get my feet under me, learn the game better, learn the matchups, learn the boards. And I took them to KTO 2 in 2023 and did really well with them. But after KTO, I said, you know what? I've got these Tyranids on the shelf. I want to give them another go. So I've been maining them for the last 10, 11 months, just nothing but reps with them. And I am the High Fleet player at our local store. And every week it's, yep, I have High Fleet. Who wants to fight them? And I have to give credit to the guys Dan and Ryan, for bringing their intercessors into me so much, because it's always a very one-sided game, but it's still a lot of fun. And it's something you don't get to see a whole lot, where, yes, you've only got melee options. I don't care about shooting, and to see how that strategy pans out for a lot of teams, it's very cool. Because certain teams that lean into certain things, shooting or fighting, they all have their niche. But I just love seeing the big guys take the table. I'm a fan of that.
Yeah.
So are there any other events coming up in your region? I know, obviously, in New York, we're going to have the Bushwick Brawl, which is going to be a streamed event on Twitch, which is on February 25th, which is a Sunday, which is a little awkward. But we're going to try to do 4 rounds for anyone who's listening and curious in coming. You know, drop by. We'll be up on Twitch, so at the very least, we'll put the link up when it comes up on our Discord. So if you haven't joined that, join that. But is there anything else coming up for Plasma Spam, Jeremy?
I don't think there's anything directly associated with us. We do have a local event that happens in DC the first Sunday of every month lately, and that's usually a pretty good scene. A lot of us go down for that. But I think beyond that, Plasma Spam is looking to start hosting our own tournaments and running things more effectively ourselves. What it's going to mean usually is that we can't play per se, and I will probably have to help TO or set up or provide things. But Plasma Spam is definitely looking to start hosting more of our own big events and not just being the guys that show up and take third and eighth place at LVO and 15th place. And instead, now we're the guys that are hosting tournaments too. So there's some things coming down the works, but nothing immediate, I would say.
Yeah, that sounds good. I think our final call out is if make sure to get a gauge from Dakota, Lester's Workshop, you know, the host, the primary host for LVO. I think we all had a great time at LVO. So next year, if anyone's interested in going, you know, that's definitely a good spot to meet up. And Vegas is relatively easy to travel to. So definitely keep your wallets peeled.
Yes. Yes, Adepticon is creeping up as well, which I'm looking at going to. I don't know if either of you are planning to go, but Adepticon is just outside of Chicago. It's fun. I mean, they didn't have like a ton of kill team tickets, which hopefully they expand a little bit. But I've gone 2 years now, and not to the GT, but I did the first year. But Adepticon is a lot of fun. I mean, it's a cool spot. It's a fun event. The website's a nightmare.
There may be a chance for me to go to Adepticon, but it would probably be in a TOing aspect and not necessarily as a player.
We'll see.
And I'll have more to say about that in future podcasts as a final teaser. Thanks, Jeremy, for coming on. If you've got any final shout outs, now's the time. Otherwise, you know, it's been great chatting to you about High Fleet, a very cool compendium team.
Yeah, I definitely want to shout out the Plasma Spam community. They've been great for just, like you said, they took me on as a new player. They put me through the ropes. I learned a whole lot from everybody there. They've been very great and supportive of everything. And it's not just, oh, Ryan took third, I took eighth, Nick took 15th. It's, hey, our team took third, eighth, and 15th. Our team did very well. So it's a very great community we have going. And it's just a shout out to anybody who's thinking of High Fleet. Don't count Compendium out. We've got legs. We have fun. We can roll dice too. And give them a try. See what happens. What do you got to lose?